Good morning and welcome to me. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
In the chapter on charity in the Perennial Philosophy, Aldous Huxley writes, "We can only love what we know, and we can never know completely what we do not love. Love is a mode of knowledge, and when the love is sufficiently disinterested and sufficiently intense, the knowledge becomes unitive knowledge and so takes on the quality of infallibility. Where there is no disinterested love, or more briefly, no charity, there is only biased self-love, and consequently only a partial and distorted knowledge, both of the self and of the world of things, lives, minds, and spirit outside the self. We will not find charity defined as disinterested love in any dictionary." The philological arm strikes again. Charity, it would seem, arises from a different order of being, love, that isn't focused on the self-interest of adhering to an imposed standard of being the good, right person. Every conditioned human can relate to the feelings of deprivation, resentment, and anguish that arise from attempting to be unselfish rather than charitable. So how does charity or disinterested love behave? Since the philological arm has also distorted the word love, it behooves us to look for a definition that comes from a source closer to the enemy. Nisargadatta Maharaj says, "To me, nothing exists by itself. All is the self. All is myself. To see myself in everybody and everybody in myself most certainly is love. Replace self-love with love of the self, and the picture changes." Incidentally, Maharaj also gives us a definition for knowledge, attention. Do not undervalue attention. It means interest and also love. To know, to do, to discover, or to create, you must give your heart to it, which means attention. All the blessings flow from it. Charity, we could say, is the natural impulse to be attentive to and interested in who we are authentically. From that continuous awareness of all that is good springs responsiveness, kindness, and inclusiveness. What is compassionate for all is the happy result of being charitable. And here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? First caller?
Oh, that's me. Hello, it's Michelle in Mountain View.
Hey, Michelle.
Good morning. Well, I have a day off today, so just really enjoyed sitting properly and a lot of, things swirling about charity and just hearing that passage. There's so much there, and I think, as others have said this week, the word charity and disinterested love, they're kind of like, quickly go up into the mind and try to figure that out, because there's certain meanings attached to like charity, and there's this sense of like giving downward, you have something and someone is lesser than or, doesn't have, and then you're supposed to give downward, this charity work, which is part of the system of being the right good person, that I can feel okay about being up here because I'm giving to something to them down there.
That's right. And it's very clear that we're separate, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, better.
And that almost that thing of, doing the charity work or, giving something, it's like it kind of maintains that. It almost justifies my being, my being up here.
That's right. Yes. And, of course, what it obscures, and maybe this is where you're going, but what it obscures is the fact that everything I have has been given to me. You know, there's so much stuff about, but I've worked hard for it. Which assumes that people who don't have aren't working hard.
Right. Which, there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, exactly. And seeing through that is critical, isn't it? Because otherwise, you know, well, yeah, I mean, I have everything I have because, you know, I've worked hard and I deserve it. I've earned it. And then when we stop and look at that, we realize, actually, I haven't. You know, it's all been given to me. Everything is given to everybody. So,
Yeah, and I don't know, as I was sitting too, something it came to mind. I was one time when my daughter was younger, took her to a children's theater. It was like two brother and sister bear, and they were the two characters, the actors, and they were going through the seasons. And so there are a lot of little kids there, like 2, 3, 4 years old, and they handed out some props to everyone. So each child watching had like a little blanket. It was one of the things. And when it came to be winter and the bears were supposed to go to sleep, and the sister bear pulled away the blanket, and brother bear couldn't get any blanket for himself. And so he just ended up sitting up and sat there shivering. And there was a little, I don't think the child could be more than 2 years old, in the very front, and very naturally just went up and handed the blanket to the bear.
Oh my gosh, what a moment.
It was a beautiful moment, and I remember it, right?
Yeah,
without any, like, this is what I'm supposed to do, or it was just, you know, the most natural, you know, sensing a need, I have a thing, here, take this, you know, and it was just a really precious moment, and so that, you know, to be in that, you know, and I projected that child was just right there, watching, with that bear. And the attention was there, right? And so the child could see the bear has a need. And, you know, and so it was none of that conditioned, you know, that conditioned.
Mine and yours. It's very much a we, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know exactly how the bear feels. Oh, the bear needs a blanket.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So giving, receiving.
Let's live there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Let's be that.
Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, Michelle.
Yeah, thank
you. Thanks, Michelle.
Guess so.
Thanks, Michelle. I can't mute you, Michelle, so if you would call back in.
Sure.
So, Sherry, that just, it's such an example of what we're talking about, and to call that disinterested love, isn't it purely attentive love?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, with that description that Michelle was offering us. Disinterested, we really kind of have to look, don't we? Because it feels more like a absolutely, completely there in oneness love.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just not particular. You know, it doesn't mean anything about the little girl bear.
Right. Yes. It's that she would have given it to the bear, and she would have given it to the dog, and she would have given it to her. It's available universally. Yeah.
That's right. And no one is excluded. We don't have to say. Excluded. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
So, Sherry, we have a queue full of people we've heard from recently. And so if you haven't been in the queue lately, we invite you to put yourself in the queue. And here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Michael in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Shwani. I loved that first conversation. And I noticed that I burst into tears hearing the story. And I've noticed that more recently, just over the past couple of months, just sort of like crying for no reason. And it just feels like such a release. It's just like an opening is what it feels like. Often it doesn't feel like there's any particular content. It's not like there's a sad content. Often it feels like there's beauty, especially in nature. You know, to me, it's consistent with the assignment, which is sort of the oneness of all that we are, and the possibility to be that and reflect that and give from that.
Mm-hmm. So what I hear you saying, Michael, is that there is, you're moved, and that move, that feeling moved to presence or love or whatever we might call that, expresses itself in in tears. There's a full flowing. It doesn't have to be about any particular content. It's just simply an openness.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that occurred to me about...
And I just wanted to say, I was just reading one of Sherry's responses, and she was talking about how all the heroes have that quality of gentleness, right? The gentleness, mm-hmm. the empathy, the kindness. How can we not move to that place as we practice awareness? Because what we become more and more aware of is that.
Right? Yeah, exactly. That gentleness and that kindness. Mm-hmm. And I think often about, that our practice is to learn to save ourselves first. And from that, it naturally extends to everyone else. And I think about that, conditioned place of I give to others, but I don't, include myself in that. And just that whole metaphor about putting a seat at the table for me also, as well as everything, as well as everyone else. I'm not better than or worse than anyone else. And we're all included.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's such a beautiful redefinition of unselfish, right?
Yes.
Because that's exactly what you're pointing at. When I give to others, it's exactly what Screwtape says. Even if I am doing it out of the best of intentions, it is a conditioned giving. It's a conditional giving. Because it's not, especially if it doesn't include me. Because it doesn't come from that place of oneness you're talking about. That movement into the recognition of oneness from which everybody gets a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Michael. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, good morning. It's Carrie in Colorado.
Hey, Carrie.
Hey, interesting week with charity, and just a teeny side note that I've been kind of chuckling about all week. When I was five, we got our first dog in the family, and my parents named her Charity, and so she is, we say, ruler of doggy heaven. She was just the sweetest, best, most wonderful dog. So anytime the word charity comes around, I'm always fondly thinking of my pup from 50 years
and
ago.
Such a perfect example of it, right?
Completely giving and projecting that, of course. But as we're talking this morning and conversing, I had drop in. We were at a store this past weekend, and it's REI, and so people have memberships at REI, and we were looking around at gloves, and then this couple approached me, and I could tell they were really uncomfortable, and one of them asked me, are you a member? And so, and it's funny, I could feel kind of the guard go up on the back of the neck. These people look like they probably live rougher than I do, and I thought they're going to ask me for money, or And then they explained to me that I guess there was something they wanted to purchase, but that you could only purchase this. I can't remember what it was about it if you were a member. And so I'm still kind of feeling a little bit leery. And then they just explained, they're like, and the clerk says, if we can find somebody who would just let us use the membership card, to say it's a member, we can purchase this, this wasn't going to cost me any money or anything like that. It's just that they could not afford the membership, and it was interesting to feel the change from, oh, here is a chance for good person to step in, good right person in her cape, like I could buy this for them, I could buy them a membership, and then it said, no, they've asked me exactly for what they need, and. Mm-hmm. That's part of what I'm a little bit frustrated with right now in terms of, people's food benefits and things like that being cut. It's like, I want to give, I want to help, but in a way I need to know, people need to let me know what they need, or I need to ask what they need. And this person, they were telling me exactly what they needed, and that's all they needed, and I could do it. And I hadn't really thought about that in terms of unselfishness or charity or anything like that, but I thought, part of the unselfishness was not needing to take it, and make it more about
me. Make it about me, right?
Exactly, yeah. How can this
That's always the one, isn't it, that we're watching out for. At what point do I slide over that line and just begin to make it about me?
And it's interesting because I don't know about this need to make it about me. It's not that, I guess I know where that's coming from.
But you know what, Carrie? I'm right there with you. I'm actually right there with you. Because what we're trying to see is, where is that line? Because it does feel good to help. It does. Mm-hmm. If somebody's hungry and you can get them a meal, it feels good. It doesn't have to have that, and this makes me better than them. Or, you know, it could take me to a place of, thank God I'm not worried about where my next meal is coming from. Mm-hmm. I'm deeply grateful for that. So that feels like we don't want to, making it about me, we don't want to discount the fact that our hearts are touched in the same way as the little person with the bear and the blanket, mm-hmm. right? We're touched. It does speak to an inherent goodness in us, a oneness, I think.
Yes, you know, part of me wonders if I can earn enough good right person points or finally cross the threshold of being enough to be the good right person, that ego is going to leave me alone in my head. And we know that's not going to happen, because then, of course, if I had stepped and bought them a membership or something like that, it would have just raped me over the coals.
You bloody.
Feeling too good about yourself, Carrie. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, before I let you go, since you mentioned the food bank, Jen, who's very much part of our Sangha here, is very engaged with the food bank locally. And what I learned from her just recently is the very best thing we can do for our local food bank is give them money, because they can take that money and buy much more than mm-hmm. we could ever buy as individuals, because they can buy in bulk. And I just thought that was a great tip that I want to pass on to everybody, because everybody I know is also concerned about, well, how are people going to eat, and how do we know who's not, and who's taking care of them? And so I just wanted to share that little tip with as many people as possible.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Carrie.
All right. Gosho.
Gosho.
Thanks, Carrie. What an incredible conversation, Cherry.
Mm. So there were lots of nuances in that, weren't there, to explore? Yes. I'm eager to look more.
Mm-hmm. And here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller? Let's try that again. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. It's Janet here from England.
Hey, Janet.
Hey. I was just reflecting on the conversation that we had yesterday as well about, and Michael just reminded about looking after self or including self in the looking after. We had quite an incredible thing happen yesterday, a horribly incredible thing, that we had a lot of killing on a train. And there was a man, such a humble man, on the television, and he had stood in front of the guy with the knife, and he had put himself between the man with the knife and all the other people who were trying to scurry away. And I just think that that just makes me think about he describes just acting instinctually, instinctively, and I just think that's just an incredible thing that he did. And then the two other kind of thoughts that came in was that today I saw an elderly man counting his change, some pennies and so on, back into his purse, and then I saw him walking off very slowly. And I felt oh my, maybe I should give him a lift home, and maybe, and then it all got complicated in my mind. He wasn't, anyway, so I drove off. And then the other image that came into my mind is when, this must have been maybe 18 months ago, when you and Jen and Sherry were actually on a video call that we could see you. And I remember thinking you were all placed with flowers, with plants. And I remember thinking how beautiful each of the three of you were. And then for a moment, I kind of took that in as me too, you know, seeing myself in you and the beauty in you three. I can get those things in their purity for a moment, and then they get all mashed up with, oh, you know, I'm being clever, I'm doing clever protection or whatever. So this is a really complex area. It's very easy for conditioning and karma and ego to make my perceptions very muddy.
Yeah, so beautifully stated. So beautifully stated, because it's such a complex. Because what I hear you describe, especially in those three separate instances, right? So that person who put themselves in between somebody wielding a knife and everyone else was almost responding that just like that child who offered the blanket to the person who was shivering, right?
Yes.
There's a way in which that impulse to assist and to be responsive simply arises without any thought to, within quotes, self in that place. So that's one piece of the puzzle, right? And then there's that piece of the impulse arises in me and it gets overridden by whatever the conditioning is, right? So here's the somebody who looks like they could use a lift, and there's a generosity of impulse that probably gets met with, oh, you don't know about that, you don't know who he is, what if, right? So there's that piece of it. And then finally, that experience of being reflected in one's own purity as a projection and being able to own it, and then it gets once again muddied over. And if we stay with the content of each, it's so hard to make sense of the complexity. But to observe the process of it gives such clarity, right, Janet? That impulse that we are, that generous, that kind, that reflexive almost experience of oneness and love and action gets covered over by a process that is conditioned, that is meant to separate and meant to make us feel that there's something wrong with me for not being the person who would imagine themselves putting themselves in front of a knife, right? Well, there's evidence of that. You wouldn't give the guy a lift home. And, oh, wait, you could see it for a minute, but it wasn't yours to have.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's really helpful review of that process. Yes. And seeing the process increasingly and seeing the process as frequently as I can is the best I can do at this time.
Yes. And
the
most important. It's awareness, right?
Yeah, that's
our practice. I am aware of the process that interrupts the arising of a loving impulse.
Yes.
Which basically means that I have to be the loving impulse, and that process that arises has nothing to do with me. Let me not get confused about that.
Yes. Yes. Confusion is a good flag to spot. Yeah. Lovely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Janet.
Thank you. Gosho.
Just briefly, that's so it. You know, once we have a sense of who we are and what that process that tries to talk us out of that is, once we get that, now we know where we want our attention to be and where we want our attention not to be. That's what the practice is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, this is Jill in Massachusetts.
Hey, Jill.
Hey. I was realizing that I've looked at this a lot over the years, and just this call is reminding me of, just that when that loving impulse drops in, when I'm in the face of the choice to, you know, be an agent of that, and mm-hmm. And then the good person idea comes in, you know, instantaneously with it, and you know the good person idea is, oh, I'm going to help this person. They're going to feel this way about it. I'm going to feel mm-hmm. this way about it. This is going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. there's like the bow around it. And what I've noticed is that if I stay, and it's so hard to do, what kind of thing is to, although it's gotten easier, is to just stay with the loving impulse, you know, and trust yeah. that whatever unfolds, that loving impulse will allow for what's supposed to happen rather than
Jill, yeah. yes. Yes. That's such a critical piece of this whole thing, isn't it? So you have that loving impulse, and I love the description of the conditioned bow that goes on it, right? And so that's it. That's your part of the dance, right? You have this loving response. This, yeah. What happens after that, you don't have any control over any more than anybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's where it gets us, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, then this and that, and that's going to happen, and it's very likely none of that is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
right? But it takes us away, first of all, from that loving impulse, and then sets us up for disappointment and a sense of failure and punishment later on. And none of that is our business.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and so much questioning about, because of the, I'm just getting back in touch with like the self-doubt that comes when the good person comes in, and it's really the, you know, there's just so much suffering in it where like just staying in that loving impulse
sorry about this, but I'm very excited about what you're saying. Okay. So there you are in the that loving impulse, and if we stay with it, you know how we talk about not going with self-hate after anything, because mm-hmm. that's how we miss the clarity mm-hmm. that's going to... So there you are with that loving impulse, and if you can stay with it, you, me, we, all of us, can stay with it, then if there is something now to do, that will be apparent.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we get pulled off into this imaginary how it's going to turn out, we're going to miss the whole thing, and all that's happening is we're getting set up for feeling bad.
Yeah, exactly, which is just, it is. Okay.
There it is, right. Well, and the thing that I love so much about it is that it's across the board. We're talking about one thing now, you know, this particular content, if you will, but it applies to everything. If we can stay here,
mm-hmm.
then all is going to be available to us, because mm-hmm. here is where everything is. As soon as we look anywhere else, we're gone. It's not going to go well, which is fine. We have to see that, right? We have to see it.
Yeah, and that all of those, other, whether it's good person, whether it's the doing, Jill, whether it's all the other little personalities,
mm-hmm.
all have their own package too, which is, you know, there's a moment of self-doubt, you know, it's this suffering package. Whereas
it gets overlaid.
It's overlaid, exactly.
On whatever arises in the moment, yeah.
Exactly, that's definitely my experience. Well, this has been delightful to talk to you about this.
Fabulous, just love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jill.
Ashwini, I have to say, this whole thing is just so inspiring that that's all I can actually say about it. You know me, I want you to turn it into a workshop or a retreat so that we can explore it, stay with this more and explore it more. But that could be the jumping off of the moment that I was just so excited about with Jill.
Oh, I see what you're saying. There is that impulse, right? The impulse arising to be in the moment, to have this more, and that that's
more
jumping off.
Could be. I'm suspicious. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Sherry. Go happy.
Go happy.